Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of A Teaching, a Song, a Poem, and a... We're going to get a joke this week? What do you think? Sure, I'll throw one in. But now as I say that, I'm like, well, now I got to find a joke. So that'll happen. I'll get a joke in here. But we're going to start with the normal way of starting, which is to very quickly say thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the money that you donate to what we do. It's important. It keeps the lights on here and gives us some measure of stability. It's really important. So thank you. The teaching this week is a continuation from last week. Last week, I said I was going to do, I think, a four-part series on the three jewels of Buddhism, sometimes called the three jewels, sometimes called the three treasures of Buddhism. And last week, I sort of set up what those are, why we might be interested in them. And then I'm going to go into the first of them in more detail this week. But to sort of, if you didn't listen to the last episode, there's an idea in Buddhism that says we take refuge in these three jewels or three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And so what do we mean by taking refuge? Well, refuge is really just a place that is safe, that we can go to, a place that we can go to for comfort, a place that we could turn to for strength, a place that we can go to when we need support. And so in Buddhism, we talk about taking refuge in these three things. And in the last episode, I told a story about me getting sober again and kind of having to find out what did a higher power mean to me and how over time, this idea of taking refuge in the three jewels has sort of fit in for me into what that higher power is, or said slightly differently, in 12-step programs, we say you need a higher power to help you, and I have translated that to sort of say, well, what I need is a place to go for refuge. There's a passage from the Dhammapada, which is one of the most ancient collections of teachings attributed to the Buddha. I'll read them. These are verses 188 through 192. They go to many a refuge, to mountains and forests, to park and tree shrines, people threatened with danger. That's not the secure refuge, not the supreme refuge. That's not the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. But when having gone to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for refuge, you see with right discernment. So that's just sort of the classic text that this idea comes from. So I want to talk now about the first of those refuges, the Buddha. So I take refuge in the Buddha. What does that mean? Well, first, it's helpful to know that there are usually, traditionally, three levels of Buddhist refuge. Sort of, Buddhism just goes on and on with its threes of this and threes of that and the five skandhas and the three treasures and the four noble truths and the seven doors of awakening. And as Jack Kornfield famously said, the Buddha was definitely a list maker. Anyway, we've got these three treasures, and for each of them, there are three levels. There's sort of an outer, inner, and then an innermost level. So we could look at these in differing levels. So let's talk about taking refuge in the Buddha. On that outer level, we're taking refuge in the historical Buddha is one way to do it. So what does that mean, I take refuge in the historical Buddha? Well, we might just take refuge in knowing a normal human being found a way to inner freedom, that can be a path for us. Another way to think of taking refuge in this traditional sense, in this outermost level, is to take refuge in a teacher. Or in 12-step programs, we have a sponsor. We take refuge in a sponsor, right? We're going to these people and we're trusting in them and we're getting help from them. So the outermost level of this is sort of taking refuge in the Buddha, a teacher, or someone else who's played that kind of role in your life. So you can pause a moment here and reflect in your own life on, you know, are there people, teachers, or other people in your life that you have been able to take refuge in, or that you could. It's very helpful to be thinking about, how does this apply to me? What are the places I might apply this? So now we move to the next level in, and this is the slightly deeper level, the inner level. And here, what we're really taking refuge in is in our own Buddha nature and the Buddha nature of other people. Well, what is Buddha nature? Well, that could be an episode or two on its own, but I'll keep it simple and say we could think of Buddha nature simply in this case as the potential for greater awakening and greater wisdom. If we just keep it as simple as that, we don't get real fancy with it. We just say, okay, I take refuge in my own potential for greater awakening and greater wisdom, or my own potential to change and to grow and to become a better person. So that's the next level, the inner level. And also we can have that faith in other people. Other people have the ability to awaken, to grow, to change. So the Buddha nature is the next level. And then finally, the innermost level of this is really when people say taking refuge in the Buddha. What they mean is taking refuge in the underlying unity of all things, or taking refuge in emptiness. How does that make sense? Taking refuge in emptiness, what could that possibly be? And emptiness does not mean nothingness in the way it's used in Buddhism. It's safer to say emptiness means everything all at once. Or as Bernie Glassman says in a book, Infinite Circle, he says, this is not some sort of void, but rather the whole universe, or in mathematical terms, the universal set that contains or is everything. If this universal set is full to overflowing with everything without exception, in what sense is it empty? Only in the sense that it contains everything before we name things this or that, completely independent of all labels, concepts, or categories. So taking refuge in emptiness is taking refuge in believing in this underlying unity of all things. The Zen teacher Katagiri Roshi referred to it as the light that shines through infinity. And that is one of my favorite phrases of all time. It's this underlying energy that connects everything. And I'm not being overly mystical, although it seems like I'm being overly mystical. But if you look even down to the atomic level, everything is whirring and moving and dancing. There's something underlying it. And so we can take refuge in this. Now, for most of us, this refuge is intellectual, right? We may not be having the experience of this deep unity, but we can touch into it. And one of the easiest ways to touch into it, I think, is the Thich Nhat Hanh idea of interbeing, which is another way of saying this same thing. And he describes interbeing, and I love the way he talks about it. He says, you know, if I look at a book, right, if I look at this book here, if I'm a poet, or if I'm seeing interbeing or emptiness, what I'm seeing is so many things. I'm seeing a tree, and I'm seeing a cloud, and the rain, and the sun, and I'm seeing the person who cut down the tree, and I'm seeing the author sitting in his study writing it, and the person who bound the book together, and the delivery truck driver, and the person who made the delivery truck driver's lunch, and on and on and on it goes, right? That is the taking refuge in the Buddha in the innermost sense that we're talking about. So I hope that is helpful. Those are three different ways to approach taking refuge in the Buddha. Next time, I will talk about taking refuge in the second of the three jewels or the three treasures, which is taking refuge in Dharma. And we'll talk about different ways we might look into that. And now for your joke. It's a Buddhist joke, and it's a bad joke. So it fits perfectly. And I think it's actually kind of funny. Why did the Buddhist coroner get fired? He kept marking the cause of death as birth. if you have studied Buddhism and you understand the Buddhist teachings of dependent causation, basically it's saying, you know, the cause of death is because we were born. Everything causes something, right? Infinite causes and conditions. Boom, boom, boom. Yep, I am a barrel of laughs. All right, and now let's move into a poem. It occurs to me that I call this episode a teaching song and a poem, but it almost is always a teaching, a poem, and a song. But I'm attracted to the way that first one sounds, teaching song and a poem. Although teaching poem and a song would be not alphabetical. T comes after P and S. Yes. All right, your poem from one of my favorite poets, one of everybody's favorite poets, probably, Mary Oliver. This poem is called Why I Wake Early, and I'm dedicating it to my early waking best friend, Christopher. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was, dear star, that just happens to be where you are in the universe to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start the day, in happiness, in kindness. That was called Why I Wake Early by Mary Oliver. And as I said, I dedicated it to my early waking, miserable and crotchety best friend, Chris. No, he's not that. I'm kidding. Sort of. All right. Song. Our song this week is called Little River by the Little River Band. Was there something called the Little River Band? I think there was, but that's not who this is by. This is by an artist I happen to really like who goes by the name The Tallest Man on Earth. He is not particularly tall, as near as I can tell, but he is, I think, a great songwriter and a really fascinating guitar player. And this song is called Little River, and his lyrics are always very, very poetic. It takes a little listening and a little interpretation. It's hard to know exactly what he's getting on about, but the images that it brings up are really beautiful. So this song is called Little River, and it is from The Tallest Man on Earth. I will leave you with it. I forgot to mention something before I go into this, which you may have noticed, and if you read our newsletter, you will have heard about, but we're going to releasing 2 episodes a week of the main podcast. So you're going to get double the amount of wonderful interviews. And if you listen to both those and me in this, that might be more Eric Zimmer than most people could possibly need, but I hope you'll tune into all of it, and I hope you'll enjoy all of it. Anyway, this is Little River by The Tallest Man on Earth, and I will see you next time. Thanks.
Well, there is something about the quiet, uplifting laughter. You just spent so many years, she's by a cloud, oh, and it's taken you so far, far past the cliffs, eh? Now your feet just poke around to feel the ground, oh. You say, is this a joke? I float, come on now. I see there's something down below. Just let me fall to be of use, make me the rainstorm. Just a piece of hail, you know. You said all the time it needs to take, and all the time there's a shiver from some fallen tear. But is it honest like a fallen log to dream of things like a little river to the golden ground? And there is something about the quiet surprise and darkness. You just sing about your own death in your closet. You stumble out into the pitch black hallway. You think you've lost so many times, though it's not war yet. You say, are these my eyes? You said, come on now. Already lost my sense to feel. But there is always someone out there who will listen. And then there's nothing but a dream. You said all the time it needs to take, and all the time there's a shiver from some fallen tear. But is it honest like a fallen log to dream of things like a little river to the golden ground?